Welcome to DAC Beechcroft's Lawcast. I'm Joanne Bell, a legal director and knowledge lawyer in the Employment, Pensions and Immigration team. And this is the third episode in series two of our podcast about the Employment Rights Bill. Today, I'm joined by partner Michelle Corrigan and legal director Kerry Fuller.
Hi, Jo.
Hi.
So by this stage, we had expected the bill to have gained royal assent and become the Employment Rights Act 2025, but it is still currently held up in the parliamentary ping pong process. We did debate delaying recording this podcast until the bill obtains royal assent, but we decided to crack on as we know that listeners want to be kept up to date as to what's happening. So in this podcast, we're going to look at the bill's progress through the parliamentary process, where we are now, and what measures we expect there to be consultations on in 2026. So Michelle, can you tell us where things currently stand with the bill in the parliamentary process, please?
Yes. Well, I can tell you where they stand on the date we're recording this podcast, which is Thursday, the 11th of December. So do bear that in mind, depending on when you are listening to this. This week, we've had another round of ping pong, with the five outstanding measures on the bill having been debated in the House of Commons on Monday, the 8th of December. The bill returned to the House of Lords for the third time yesterday, 10th of December. Although agreement was reached on four of the five measures, there's still one issue outstanding on unfair dismissal compensation, so there'll need to be a further round of ping pong next week.
Thanks, Michelle. Yes, as you say, in the Lords' debates yesterday, the Lords accepted most of the outstanding measures, didn't they? So the only issue which is currently subject to disagreement is about the cap on unfair dismissal. Kerry, could you tell us some more about this and in particular, what's been happening generally with unfair dismissal, please?
Yes, of course. No problem, Jo. So listeners will remember that it was a flagship manifesto promise in the last general election that employees would be given day one unfair dismissal protection by repealing the current requirement for an employee to have 2 years' service, and that's to claim ordinary unfair dismissal. But to cut to the chase, a cross-party coalition in the House of Lords kept pushing for an amendment to the bill so it contains a six-month qualifying period for unfair dismissal, and they've been successful. But that's not the end of the story, if only it were that simple. And somewhat surprisingly, back on the 27th of November, the government announced that a deal had been done with stakeholders, including trade unions, to drop their flagship day one right promise and instead make ordinary unfair dismissal subject to that six-month qualifying period, as I've just said. And the press coverage suggested that a deal had been done with businesses and trade unions in order to achieve royal assent, with at least an implicit suggestion that with the government having conceded on this one flagship measure, that would affect the House of Lords approach to the rest of the bill.
Okay, so thank you for that recap, Kerry. So we know the government's position on changes to unfair dismissal, but could you explain the specifics, Michelle?
Yes, of course. So on the 5th of December 2025, it became clear that not only would the qualifying period be reduced from 2 years to 6 months for ordinary unfair dismissal, but also the government wanted to remove the cap on compensation entirely, which is currently set at 52 weeks pay or £118,223, whichever's lower. Now, removing the cap came as a complete surprise. So whilst there has been reference to lifting the cap in the government's press release on the 27th of November, there were no details on what this actually meant or the specific implications for compensation. It hadn't been previously consulted on, it hadn't previously been debated during the parliamentary process of the bill, neither was it in the manifesto. It was only when the government published their amendment on the 5th of December that it was clear that they meant removing the cap entirely.
And have the House of Lords pushed back on this on the basis that it's come out the blue?
Yes, Jo, they have. As we said, this is now the one outstanding issue on the bill, and it's stopping the bill getting royal assent, which means we don't yet have an Act of Parliament. And so yesterday, this was hotly debated in the House of Lords. That was on the 10th of December. And the Lords passed an amendment which keeps the cap as it is for now, but would require the government to review and consult within 3 months of the bill receiving royal assent. So as a result of that, it means that the bill has not been passed in the House of Lords. It will go back to the Commons next week to see whether or not the government will accept the Lords' latest position, which is the cap can't be removed entirely, but it would be subject to consultation within 3 months of royal assent. And to your question about has there been pushback, there has indeed been a lot of consternation and frustration, actually, not just in the House of Lords, but also in the House of Commons about how this issue has been handled by the government, because, as you've said, it's not been consulted on and it's come out of the blue.
So I suppose if the government agrees with the Lords amendment next week, in the sense that there will be consultation after royal assent, all options are really back on the table through that consultation. So the cap could remain as it is, it could be removed completely, or the cap in terms of the number of weeks pay could be removed, but the overall financial amount could stay, or I suppose even be raised slightly as well. So lots still to be determined. But before we leave this topic, are there any further implications of losing the cap on unfair dismissal compensation, Michelle, in the broader context of the ERB changes?
Yeah, I think so. Without a cap, our view is that unfair dismissal claims become more attractive to issue, which means that there are likely to be more claims of unfair dismissal in the employment tribunal system. In the parliamentary debates in both houses, they talked about the intention behind lifting the cap, which is to remove the need for employees to bring unnecessary and complex claims. Now, of course, this is a reference to employees without the required minimum period of service for unfair dismissal who bring discrimination or whistleblowing claims instead, those claims where you don't need that service. There was also a debate around this making the tribunal system more efficient, albeit this wasn't an agreed view. There has also been discussion about further investment in the tribunal system, which obviously would be very good news. As many listeners will know, at the moment we have an employment tribunal system which is really struggling with the number of claims before it. In the last quarter we have tribunal statistics for, there was a 21% increase in claims when compared to the same quarter last year. So it's really overwhelmed.
Okay, so and what should employers now be thinking about in terms of preparing for the reduction in the qualifying period for unfair dismissal?
Yes, thanks, Jo. It's very clear now that employers really need to ensure they're getting their recruitment processes right in the run-up to these changes taking effect. So one thing we were expecting on this change was for employers to have to start grappling with what this initial period of employment looked like, which we've talked about before, and that's now completely gone. So rather than focusing on what a system might look like to dismiss someone, really we need to focus on getting recruitment right. The government's intention is that the qualifying period change will come into effect on the 1st of January 2027. So employers would be really well advised to revisit their recruitment processes in the first few months of 2026 to ensure they work, they get the right people with the appropriate skills. They might need to think about lengthier recruitment processes and or changes to interviews and assessment centres. And the other thing is that employers will need to review their contracts for new joiners to decide whether to keep, drop or amend probation periods. And what I've got in mind here is that practically many employers have a 6 month probation period or 3 months with an ability to extend. And these are usually subject to a week's notice period. So in order not to give employees the right to bring an unfair dismissal claim, employers who operate probation periods of up to 6 months will need to have effected the dismissal a week before that 6 month period is up, to take account of the notice. So as a result, employers may want to reduce probation periods or even think, well, I'm so confident in my recruitment processes, I don't need a probation period at all, perhaps. So there is definitely new work to be done early on in 2026 as a result of this last minute change on unfair dismissal qualifying service, Jo.
So we've mentioned that there were four other amendments ping-ponging between the lower and upper houses of Parliament. Is there anything you'd like to flag about those, Kerry?
Just a few. So the first one is on 0 hours contracts and the need to make a guaranteed hours offer. And the Lords have been pushing an amendment which required employers to notify workers of their right to a guaranteed hours offer, but then allowed the employees to opt out of any further process. However, yesterday on the 10th of December, the Lords didn't insist on this, and instead the 0 hours piece is going to become a matter for consultation. Now, yesterday during the House of Lords debate, a reference period for looking at hours of 26 weeks was mooted. And again, this will be explored through consultation. Also, there was some debate yesterday about what constitutes seasonal work. And again, a definition of that will be explored through consultation. And then finally, on the 50% balloting threshold for industrial action, the House of Lords wanted the 50% turnout requirement to be retained. However, again, yesterday, the Lords voted in a very close vote, 223 to 219 votes, to agree to the removal of the 50% threshold in line with the government's position.
Okay, thanks, Kerry. So we are nearly there, but I guess the big question, Michelle, is do we think the bill it will receive royal assent before Christmas?
That is the big question. Yes, or at least everything is pointing to this at the moment. Ultimately, everyone wants this done before the Christmas break. There's no doubt about that. It's more than possible that the Commons will accept the Lords' position on needing to consult on the compensation cap when the ERB is back in the Commons next week, and then the bill would move to obtain royal assent. If that doesn't happen, it's over to the House of Lords later next week. And the positions of the Houses are definitely getting closer. So, yes.
Thanks, Michelle. So I'd like now to move on, if we can, to talk about a comment Peter Kyle, the business secretary, made at the CBI conference when he said that the government will listen to businesses, but there'd also be 26 consultations on the bill, which obviously is a lot. Can you cast any further light on this, please, Michelle?
Yes, to some extent, Joe. At the CBI conference in November, Business Secretary Peter Kyle did confirm that the Employment Rights Bill would involve 26 separate consultations, as you've said, before it's fully implemented. He later clarified that this included the consultations that had already concluded and the ones that are currently live. So that's essentially a further 15 consultations, which obviously is still significant. On the day that we're recording this podcast, there are 5 live consultations. They cover trade union access, the right to inform employees of their right to join a trade union, and both of those close on the 18th of December. There's also bereavement leave and pregnancy and new mother's rights, and they close on the 15th of January 2026. And the government is also consulting on a draft code of practice on electronic and workplace balloting for statutory union ballots, and that closes on the 28th of January 2026. So lots happening at the moment. Listeners may recall that the first tranche of consultations on the ERB completed a year ago, so in December 24, and they were the ones covering collective redundancies and fire and rehire, trade unions, strengthening SSP, and applying 0 hours contract measures to agency workers. And we've also had further closed consultations on sectoral collective bargaining for school support staff and the adult social care sector.
Okay, so the number of consultations, is this a surprising development, Kerry?
No, not really. Although when 26 was mentioned, I think we were all quite surprised. but we knew that an awful lot of the detail in the RB was going to be set out in regulations rather than in the Act itself. And also we knew that the government had said they would consult on the detail of the measures. And this approach to legislating was one of the matters that the House of Lords were very unhappy about when the bill first went to the upper house. So it's not surprising that a lot of detail is yet to come. And as Michelle's just said, she's just laid out 11 consultations that are either live or have closed. And so we've got a further, well, it was 15, and I think another two, as we'll come on to explain, as a result of the debates this week. And it's good the government are consulting on what that detail looks like. In terms of the timing of the consultations, listeners may remember that initially, under the government's roadmap for implementation, which was published on the 1st of July this year, there were three periods of consultation, the latest being winter or early 2026. The initial roadmap document acknowledged that there may be a need to have more than one round of consultation on certain measures. But then during the House of Lords debate at the end of October, the Parliamentary Undersecretary of State for the Department of Business and Trade stated that the government would continue to consult during 2026 on exploitative zero-hours contracts, flexible working and industrial action. So, as I say, we knew the timetable had slipped a little bit back then, and we knew there was a lot of information to come out through consultations.
Okay. And so, Michelle and Kerry, what measures are we expecting consultations on in 2026?
So a lot, to be honest. On the specific measures first, on unfair dismissal, obviously the focus of this consultation has changed now, in that the focus would have been and was supposed to be on the initial period of employment. But as that's not happening now, the focus of the consultation would be on essentially the compensation cap that we talked about earlier. We're also expecting a consultation on collective redundancy, consultation thresholds, and that would include things like the threshold for triggering collective consultation where redundancies are proposed across multiple establishments. And then we're also expecting a consultation on fire and rehire and re-engaging, which would include updates to the code of practice. And Kerry, there's also consultations which are not to do with dismissals, aren't there?
That's right, Michelle. Yes. So quite a number of those, including on zero and low hour contracts, as we mentioned earlier during the House of Commons debate on Monday. That was the 8th of December. An amendment was passed requiring the government to consult on the length of the initial reference period over which hours would be assessed, both for directly engaged workers and agency workers. The meaning of and the length of any subsequent reference periods, again, both for directly engaged workers and agency workers. There also needs to be clarity on what constitutes low hours. So again, we'll have to wait and see whether that will be through consultation or set out in the regulations being produced on this measure. As we've already said, we're now expecting a consultation on what seasonal work is, and that's obviously very important for organisations who have peak periods, such as Christmas for retailers. And obviously that sort of peak employment is fundamentally different to permanent or year-round employment. In terms of industrial relations, we're expecting updates to the CAC's code on unfair practices during the recognition process, and a separate consultation on an ACAS code of practice to cover the new rights and protections for trade union representatives. On sexual harassment, we are expecting the steps that organisations will need to take in terms of what constitutes all reasonable steps to be a matter of consultation as well. And the government have said they want to look at what this looks like for organisations of different sizes and in different sectors. Flexible working will also be subject to consultation, and in particular, what process needs to be adopted for handling requests reasonably. On gender equality action plans, the government have indicated that they're going to consult with the Equalities and Human Rights Commission on what needs to be set out in terms of guidance on that. And then also there will be a consultation on how umbrella companies will be regulated.
Great, thank you, Kerry. And Michelle, will these consultations actually help employers to understand what they're going to be required to do?
To some extent, yes, they will. And that's obviously the hope, ultimately, that we get a bit of clarity. It does depend, though, on the approach that the government takes to the particular consultation. So if we look at the current open consultations, the trade union consultations, so the ones on access and the to be informed of the right to join a union, they do outline the government's preferred approach, so give a clear vision on how the government actually intends these measures to be implemented. But on the other hand, the open consultation on new protection for pregnant workers and maternity leavers do not state a preference for how the law will work. So it really, unfortunately, will depend on the approach that the government take. But we will have more of an idea of what detail could be in once we have the consultation papers and the draft, any draft code or regulations. Where the specifics of the measures ultimately land, we'll have to wait for the government's responses to the consultations. The duration of the consultations and dates by which the government will respond were not specified in the initial roadmap document and remain unspecified even today.
Okay, so that leads us on to a final and important question, Kerry. Do we think these consultations and drafting of regulations can all be done ahead of the three implementation phases, which obviously the first is April 2026, then we've got October 2026, and then on to 2027?
It's going to be tight, Jo, for those April 2026 changes. I do think that in terms of the changes to day one rights issues, those will come in April as planned, because the government need to make regulations for those day one rights measures, so for statutory sick pay and for paternity and unpaid parental leave. But they can be made relatively quickly, and I expect they will be made in time. Commencement regulations are also required for disclosures about sexual harassment to count as a protected disclosure for the purposes of whistleblowing protection. That's another change due to come into force in April 2026. And again, we do expect those commencement regulations to be made in time. But one other matter which a change is happening in respect of in April 2026 is the establishment of the Fair Work Agency. And we've talked about this, that the wording is quite specific, because the government say in their roadmap they will establish a Fair Work Agency by April 2026. And this is going to be the single labour market enforcement body, which is going to take over the functions of various different existing enforcement bodies covering minimum wage, statutory sick pay, modern slavery and the enforcement of holiday pay. So, as I said, the government has said they'll establish that body by April 2026. It will take much longer for the existing agencies to be wound up. So we don't expect it to be up and running by April 2026. And then one other measure due to come in next April is simplifying the trade union recognition process. And again, further consultation is expected before substantive regulations can be made on that. Now, this consultation was expected to take place in the autumn of 2025. So they're behind on that target. And I think the date of April 26 is going to be harder to achieve, therefore, but not impossible. So it'll be tight for April 2026. But I think the majority, if not all of those provisions, would be able to come in if we get, you know, royal assent this week, but we will have to wait and see. Obviously, those later implementation dates of October 26 and into 2027 are less problematic.
Thank you. So I think I'll draw it to a close now, but thank you very much, Michelle and Kerry, for your insights. And if any of our listeners would like to contribute to the forthcoming consultations, you can do so directly online, or you can speak to your usual DAC Beechcroft contact. Our survey in respect of additional protection for new parents remains open till the 5th of January, so please do contribute to that. In the meantime, we'll also be releasing another podcast in the new year, and we also plan to host another live webinar in March on the trade union and industrial relations provisions. For now, though, thank you, Michelle and Kerry, and thank you, everyone, for listening.